John Swift lifted Reading FC to a fifth win in six games and to within a slither of the playoff places by scoring the only goal of a tight, thoroughly championship affair with Barnsley on Saturday. Welcome to episode 275 of the Tyler Sen podcast with your host, Mark Mayo. Very happy to be back in the hosting chair this week. Thank you to Ollie for a couple times. It feels like I'm a little bit rusty maybe coming back into the show as the host, but thanks to Ollie for pitching in and finally getting a chance to get away from work and everything like that. Hopefully everyone's, seems like people are getting that chance now over the last few months to have a little bit of a break and come back fully refreshed. And Reading certainly did that off the international break. And to talk over the win with me is Alan West. Westy, how's it going, mate?
Yeah, very well, thank you. And a bit like yourself, a bit rusty, and been on it for a while, but re-infused by results, that's for certain, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get into that Barnsley game in just a bit. Talk about the mailbag as well. That's surprisingly, a couple of questions just on how things might go wrong in the mailbag, and we'll cover news bites. And then we've got a game against Blackpool in midweek to discuss a bit later on. And as always, a big thanks to ZCZ Films, our sponsor, and our Patreon subscribers. So let's go into the recap then. Talk about that 1-0 win at home to Barnsley.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Well, we had an unbeaten run against Barnsley that's now been extended from 8 to 9. So Reading pretty much on top of Barnsley when it comes to our meetings over recent years. Even last season when Barnsley were pretty decent, got some okay results against them. And Westy, I suppose this one was a little bit of battle of the styles. Barnsley, as they were last season, really, really high press, get in your face, maybe not quite as good at it this year with their manager going and changing that. But generally speaking, they're still similar sort of team. Reading, actually, statistically speaking, Reading created the second least amount of presses, if you want to call it that, over the season going into the game. Barnsley had the most. So what we got was kind of a battle of the styles. And Barnsley, as I say, got in Reading's faces. Reading didn't necessarily know how to deal with it, but still came out with the win.
Ironically, yeah, it's funny to say that. I think last year, very similar approach, as you already alluded to. But it was a typical championship game. You know, it could have gone either way. Wasn't always the best at times, but you've got to look at Reading now at the moment, and they're getting results and not necessarily playing that well. I think there's much more to come from Reading. I said it about 6 or 8, 7 weeks ago. I tweeted when everyone was saying Pownoe out. I said, you know, he's not had the players, and now you've got the players, you're seeing a massive, massive difference in being able to pick teams like Barnsley off, who will press you and will try and get in your faces as they did. And it, again, last year it worked for him beautifully, didn't it? And obviously Woodrow's always a threat up front for him. He's a good championship striker, not a player. I wouldn't be too disappointed if he ended up signing for us, you know, at some point, because he knows where the goal is, and he's playing in what you'd have to say is an average championship side with a way of playing that has been successful. I think ironically the goal, I'm going to talk about it in a minute, but the goal came from a long ball forward. And you notice these high press teams, if you can, if you've got good players who can pick long balls, then sort of their press gets it's null and void for them, because obviously you can, if the ball's gone 6 yards up the pitch and you're pressing the defenders, as long as that ball's accurate and they've got good quality, that's how you pick them sort of teams off. And they figured it out in the end, Reading, and got the result that, again, pushed them further up the table.
Well, that's the thing with the goal, isn't it? Is that maybe if you'd have said to me 3-4 years ago, we'll have, I mean, I guess obviously Scott Dan playing the ball over the top, you wouldn't be able to say that, but it was a really good ball over the top. But for John Swift to be the person off the left wing making a darting run inside, collects the ball perfectly, rounds the goalkeeper, perfect finish as well. It just shows that he has become the all-round player now. And I think he's the best player of the championship at the moment. I'm saying that obviously from a biased point of view, and B, I've not watched every team in the championship this season, but I can't see anyone who's any better, or certainly anyone who's improved as much over the last few years to do that. And that's what Reading have that is the difference, isn't it? Barnsley, last season, they did have the strike they had on loan, they had Moe as well. They had good players who made the difference. And Reading this year, and John Swift, if you've got a player like that who can make the difference, then it's just such an advantage to be able to get through these games.
Yeah, I think the key is, though, Mark, I mean, Swift, obviously, he's formed probably the best, I would say, since he's ever been at Reading, which coincides with his contract running out. I'm not cynical or anything, true, but you know what I mean? That's kind of coincided with the chance of a big deal in January from some of the sort of lesser Premier League sides, which I can only say, well, I think we all know it, Swift will leave. I think he's signed a pre-contract agreement in January and he'll be gone by the time May comes at the back end of the middle of next year. I think that's a definite. I think anyone who thinks other than that is kind of deluded. But I would say this about Reading at the moment, especially from the start of the season, there was no quality in their side. And now you look at them, you've got Dan, Drinkwater, Baba, Ajaria, you know, Swift, who could arguably all play Premier League football easily. Bashiru, again, is another player that could probably play bottom level Premier League football. So basically you're looking at four or five players now that you'd say are Premier League quality. And in Drinkwater, you've got a player who was an international footballer not so long ago playing for England. So if you've got them sort of players in your first 11, you should be somewhere near the top. And I think if Reading had their full squad available to them with your Jaro and your Maites, there's no reason why they couldn't be in the top three from what I've seen in the Premier Championship this year. You've got the usual sides up, obviously Fulham and Brom, but are they unbeatable? I don't think so. So I think it's just good times to come for Reading. As long as they can keep everyone fit and firing and get Jao back in that side, I think they're going to cruise up that division.
Yeah.
I genuinely believe.
Well, that's the thing as well. You say Bournemouth, West Brom, Fulham are the top three at the moment, but Coventry are fourth. And no disrespect to Coventry, but that's the sort of team that if Reading do have serious ambitions, they can get over them. They can get past that sort of team. And I suppose that's the thing with this game, isn't it? It's kind of taking this sort of performance forward. Is the difficulty that we had in controlling the game actually a sign that we're good, because obviously we won, or is it a sign we're bad because we were unable to control the game? I'd say it's more a sign that we're good, because Barnsley may be 22nd this year with one win, but only Nottingham Forest and Bournemouth have actually beaten them by more than one goal. So the table kind of doesn't tell the whole story for Barnsley, and they were a pretty decent team. And Reading, as you say, with Scott Dan and Liam Moore as a partnership, what do you think about that going forward? On paper, that kind of complements itself quite nicely. You've got the more athletic, I guess shorter, if you want to be blunt about it, centre-back more alongside, you know, the taller, more of a unit, not going to be able to get around the pitch as much, Scott Dan. We've seen those sort of partnerships, you know, it's almost like a Sonko-Ingham-Arsene sort of partnership, isn't it, on paper that we've had before. That tends to work pretty well.
I think, yeah, it does. And I think with Scott Dan, you've got a lot of experience and you've got, like I said, a Premier League footballer playing in a championship. I mean, I know he's 34, but the option is Morrison or Dan. And I think if you look at their careers, there's only one option, isn't there? Dan has to be a better footballer than Morrison, because Morrison's never played in the Premier League or has only had fleeting chances if he's played any games. Morrison's a good championship defender and Dan's a good Premier League defender historically. So you'd have to play him every second of every day. Drinkwater, again, controlled the game. He never gives the ball away. He always looks to play forward. And Reading are winning games with a striker who hasn't scored any goals. So that tells you all you need to know. If you look at the bench again, it's nice to see Aziz come back. He has a bit of legs to come off the bench and be a threat. But other than that, I mean, there's not really anyone you're going to put on the pitch. Hence, he only made one substitution. I thought he might give Clark a go this week, but he didn't. But they need to fill that bench up with stronger. You know, if you've got a stronger bench than they've got at the moment, you can give these players a rest, because you know as well as I do, when Championship football comes along, you've got players playing week in, week out. They're going to get injured. And whether the replacements can come in and replace them and do a good a job, I don't think they can. But that 11 is as good as any, as I've said before. And I think Dan and Moore can certainly be a decent combination. I know Moore comes in for a bit of stick here and there, but if you're not saying that Moore's a good Championship defender, then I don't know what games you're watching. I know he's had a few games here and there where he's not been the best, but if you look at our defenders, you think Moore and Dan have got to be the two standouts.
Yeah, he does the job at the end of the day, Moore, and I've criticised him as well, but I do think that certainly a lot of the management comes into that's what is so key for defensive organisation, is what the manager says and what the managers to get out of them. And they've got a proper left back alongside them now that they didn't have at the start of the season, Yeardom as well, so it does bode well. And the final point that I'll make on this is that, I mean, I'm very happy to admit that I probably got it wrong on Danny Drinkwater. A lot of the season still to go. But coming in, I mean, the off-the-pitch stuff didn't worry me particularly, but the fact that he just not played very much football, the fact that he was, you know, completely outcast by a number of teams that he'd gone on loan to and everything, and he's come in, and if you tell me that football has not played really in the last 2 years, it doesn't look like it. He's hit the ground running, and he's been so ready to get involved.
He's too good for this division. I mean, Reading getting hold of him is one of the best coups I think we've ever managed, because that's a player. Do you know what I mean? That is a Premier League footballer playing a level below himself, and he will only get better as he gets fitter. and we can keep him fit, then that is a massive asset to this club. Like I say, we're winning games with a striker that hasn't scored a goal. So if you imagine if you had someone up front, it was Boateng, the ball in there, and that could be Puskas. I mean, I'm not going to have a go at him, but it could be Puskas. But if you had Joe up front, I think you've got a different side altogether. And now they're safe at the back. They've got good players playing in the defence. I mean, Southwood's goals against stats, I think, are the best in the division, whereas Raphael's were the worst. And I think that bodes badly for Raphael, but I think it's unfair in the fact that he had a side that was, let's face it, letting 20, 30 goals, shots on target go, which we've sort of beaten that away a little bit. And we look a much better unit, and we're keeping clean sheets, which is great, isn't it? That's the way to win games. Without playing that well, keep a clean sheet, you don't get beat. And if you've got players like Swift, Drinkwater and players out on the pitch that can nick a goal for you out of nothing, then it could only be a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's go into the mailbag now and hear what you have said as listeners. We'll hear from Velka Pavlovic before that, get his reaction from the game, and then go into the mailbag.
I'm very happy, obviously, 3 points, very important win, and another clean sheet. The team keeps growing, improving. Today we didn't play our best game, definitely, but we managed to get the win and the 3 points that are very important in this part of the season. So on the other side, I think that the game, we started the first half very well. I think we played very good football in the first half, and unfortunately the goal that we reviewed after in halftime, the goal that we scored in the first half, Tom Daley's goal, was on. So that would have changed the game. But you know what I like about the team, we don't complain, we just keep going, and we take our chances on set pieces, we take our chances on a counter attack, we take our chances in a very creative build-ups and bring the ball in a final third, and we take our chances also on trying over the top, which finally it worked with an amazing pass from Scott Dan and a fantastic execution from Swift. So all these things are positives. I think we didn't manage the first 15 minutes well of the second half. Although we addressed that we have to expect a team like Barnsley in this situation when they struggle, that they will always look at 0-0 is a positive result for them in a halftime.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Starting off this week, Ben Thomas, regular on the show, he says, with Drinkwater playing so well, who is the best lone player we've had in the Medeski Stadium era? Now, there's quite a number of options for this one. I know already you said online, Westie, Matt Upson. I think that probably is the answer I'd have to go for, because even as a short-term impact, I think his clean sheet record was just absolutely ridiculous, wasn't it? And he obviously went on to be a really good England international and everything.
The thing was when Upson came, when Drinkwater came, he's came on the back of quite a few loan signings, hasn't he? And quite good quality loan signings. Whereas when Upson came, they didn't have that. It was just basically Upson. And Upson made an average team virtually unbeatable. Just by being such a great centre-back that the other team couldn't score. Like we're saying, keep clean sheets, don't lose games. And it just released players that were having to hold to get forward a little bit. We scored more goals. Upson was, well, why they never signed him when they had the opportunity. If they did have the opportunity, God only knows, because that was a proper defender. That's a proper player.
Yeah, I think players like Ryan Bertrand as well are good shouts for these sort of players who came in ultimately into a position where they're, you know, left back that year, there wasn't a left back, and he came in, did just such a good job week in, week out, every minute basically. And then, you know, it's no surprise that those players have gone on, had a good career. You look at even players, I remember Nathan Ake when he came in, he'd only obviously played like 3 games for Reading, but you could just tell on the ball and the comfort that he had as a defender to move the ball around and in his positioning, it was no surprise that those players went on to having good careers now. So yeah, anyone on the Twitter wants to reply to the podcast tweet with their own best loan players that we've had in the next year, we'll definitely do that, and we'll continue the discussion. As always, you can get your questions into the mailbag via the email, thetilehurstend@gmail.com, or the Facebook and Twitter. Somerset Royal tweeted us in saying, great to be picking up these wins, but how long do you think we can keep winning these kind of games with our backs against the wall? Obviously, yesterday wasn't quite like Cardiff, but we should be looking for more once we go 1-0 up. A win is a win, but I'm not sure we get the same results playing like that week after week. And I suppose that is true to an extent, Westy, but I kind of think that in a 46-game season, you simply cannot play brilliantly every week, and that when you don't, picking up 1-0 wins against Cardiff and Barnsley like we have, hopefully it sets up a really good performance against Blackpool where, you know, maybe we can go and play really well and put 3 or 4 in. But I think we've just got to accept that this is the best case scenario for a team that, you know, with the injuries and everything we've been talking as well, Reading just getting 3 points on the board at this stage of the season is just so important.
Yeah, I mean, with the injury record we've got, and like I said, the bench being as weak as it is, it's a borderline miracle that they're doing so well. We've got players coming in that haven't played together before. I mean, that was the two centre-backs that have changed for the umpteenth time this season and have started keeping clean sheets. I just think you've got to cut them some slack because when they click, I say, when you've got a decent striker in that side, you've got a decent side. I always used to say, I've said it a million times on it, if you ain't got no Joe, you don't win the game. We've been winning games without him. And we struggled last year. As soon as he didn't play, our performances dropped off because you've got no outlet. If you've got Joe on that team, you've got a different side. So I just think stick with it as it is because you've got 11 players that are playing week in, week out and getting results. That can't carry on, but I think there's more to come from Reading. So if you're getting results now, that's a good sign.
Yeah, it's about how we build it, I guess. And obviously, if you want an example of a team that perhaps is putting in decent performances but not getting the results, look at Barnsley, because they have, you know, they didn't play badly on Saturday and they are 22nd in the league as a result of the fact they lost. Alan Scott, he emailed us in saying, with Swift in this form, his value must be increasing with every game. With this in mind, what is his minimum and maximum sale value and what do we need to do with the money? For me, what we need to find is a rock in the middle of the park to battle and inspire, turning games around and seeing games out. Matt Williams also said, negative question, apologies. However, how likely do you think it is that we'll lose Swift in January? What type of bid do you think it will take? I'll have an awful feeling we'll have another Elise style gone for well below expectation scenario. I mean, you said Westy earlier, you think he'll be gone at the end of the season. I mean, I would say that I don't think he can sign a pre-contract agreement with an English club in January. Obviously, he can basically, you know, gentleman's agreement, handshake, that sort of stuff. But he can't physically sign on the dotted line until I think it's a month before the contract expires. So I think the question is for me is the ultimate goal Reading keeping him at all costs to think that he's going to fire us to promotion, or do we accept that promotion is beyond us this year? Potential points penalty. Obviously, if there's a good deal, then it's a good deal. We get money for it. We are kind of struggling for money at the moment. Is it all of that? Is that more important than pushing through and hoping that he can deliver us to the Premier League? Because obviously, you know, if he fires us to the Premier League, though, it doesn't matter if he goes for free. Reading are laughing, aren't they? But is there the temptation, if you say Reading are going to finish 11th with Swift in their team, you'd probably sell him because that's, let's say, for argument's sake, £3 million that you don't get, and all you get, you know, Swift, he can deliver us from 12th to 11th, isn't worth £3 million. So if Reading aren't going up, I think you sell him in January.
I think that this season is absolutely pivotal to our next 10 years. If Reading really have to get promoted this year, don't they? Because if they don't, I think everyone's going to pretty much leave. We'll lose all the people. The youngsters will probably go and we'll end up being a struggling championship side. I think that the owners probably realise this and they will keep him till the end of the season, regardless of what offer comes in for him on January. Because let's face it, if we sell him and we don't make the playoffs for some reason, because I think we should make the playoffs, even with points deduction, I still think we'll be there or thereabouts. If you sell him in January and then you end up finishing mid-table anyway, you're going to lose some of your best assets. And I think really this is a sort of all or nothing season. If they don't get in the playoffs and get promoted, I think Reading are going to struggle for the next 5 or 6 years. Generally think that.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Because that's what we don't know is what it takes for us to be kind of levelled out with the financial side of things. If Reading can, you know, if maybe there's a scenario Reading can not go up this year and actually be, because, you know, as the financial fair play kind of cancels out whatever happened 3 years ago, in theory, if we're better now, maybe there will be a bit of money in the summer or whatever, we'll be not as bad as it was the previous summer. Maybe we can kind of work things out, but it just depends as to, as you say, whether it is, I'm not sure personally whether it is an all or nothing season, but it's pretty close. And
yeah, I think it might well be.
Yes,
I think as a player, £3 million ain't going to make a difference. I don't think it makes the blindest bit of difference to their finances. I mean, if you overspent by 100 million, then 3 million is a drop in the ocean, isn't it? I mean, it's a shame that we've run down these contracts and we lose these players for nothing. But there is no doubt in my mind, if I was John Swift at 26 years old, and as you said, he's probably one of the best, if not the best midfielder in the Championship, there's a Championship player. There's no way that I wouldn't be saying to my agent, right, go and see what's out there. Because let's face it, he's going to want that one last big contract, you know, 4 years till he's 30. And someone's going to offer it to him because they ain't got to pay a transfer fee. So he'd be mad, really. As on a personal point of view, John Swift would be mental to stay at Reading beyond this season because he will get three times as much money playing for your Aston Villas, your Wolves, your Brightons or Crystal Palace, whoever it is going to sign him. Because that's the sort of club he's going to, isn't it? And that, it's a no-brainer for them because, worst case, he plays for a year, he's not good enough. They sell him for 8, 9, 10 million. I think it's good business for them, and Reading are going to lose out on a player because they didn't have their house in order, and it's their own fault. And it's not the first time it's happened, does it? Like I said, it's happened last year with two of the brightest young English prospects, or the brightest young prospects in England. We lost them for next to nothing.
Yeah, no, that is ironically the only way that Reading can keep John Swift is by getting promoted and by somehow the money. Yeah, as you say, even then, you know, if we can suddenly conjure up 50 grand a week at the end of the season, that's our only chance, isn't it?
But would you give him 50 grand a week? I don't think he's a 50 grand a week player. I know he's playing well at the minute, but I don't think...
if he delivers us to promotion, then he probably
would. Yes, he does, but I think for 50 grand a week, you could probably have an upgrade on John Swift.
Yeah, well,
it's my opinion.
No, absolutely no. It's difficult, isn't it? I think that's the problem is that we're kind of giving this a judgment in October when obviously even in January we won't know. I mean, as you say, maybe £3 million does make a difference, maybe it doesn't. But even in January, we won't know whether he's worth selling because we won't know where we're going to finish. So
no, I think it's going to be a Sidwell situation where we already know he's leaving. He won't say he's leaving, and then by the time May comes, he'll be gone. And you can't blame him. Fair play to him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It reminds me, we've had it with loads of players over the years. Remember Alex Pearce was one of them. I remember seeing Alex Pearce when the whole thing was going on about his contract. There was after one game, he ran over to the fans and celebrated and tapped his badge. And it was everyone's like, oh, yep, he's off then. That's definitely happening.
Yeah, that's it.
So we'll probably have sort of thing with Swift. But I mean, ultimately, I think we'll all agree that the best case scenario is that he fires us to promotion and then it doesn't really matter.
No, that's right.
Speaking of which, Alistair, I've seen final question this week saying, do you think Reading will delay the points deduction if we continue this form? Personally, I would take the points deduction now. I mean, I don't know if Reading have any say whatsoever in when the points deduction, should it hit, when it hits. I certainly don't have much faith in the EFL for actually getting through it quickly. I'm not too down on the fact that Reading have a points deduction coming, because I don't think anyone could really argue against it. But I don't certainly think that there's any guarantee that it's going to happen in the next 6 months or 9 months or whatever. Just because there's been some media reports doesn't mean it is on the brink of happening. The EFL are hardly the most fluid and mobile organisation on the planet. So I suppose, Westy, maybe it does happen next season.
It might well do. I think they have to sort Derby out first before they ever come looking for us. Obviously, I think they've taken their points deduction to court of arbitration or something. So that might go on for a while. If they get to their 12-point deduction, then obviously it'd be Reading's turn to get whatever we get. And I don't think it'd be 12 points. But on the flip side, I think actually it's quite a motivating factor to keep winning games, isn't it? Sort of go for the jugular, because if you know you've got a points deduction coming, it's best to accumulate as much as you possibly can before they do it. And I think actually it might be motivating us to, because we only have one draw this season, might motivate us to try and win games.
Yeah.
Rather than playing out draws, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's not a bad point. I think also, I mean, as you say, with appeals and all that sort of stuff, there's half a chance that Reading might be able to appeal it, and or maybe, yeah, maybe they won't, but appeal it and then knock it into next season as a result, and then controversially stick Reading in the playoffs by 4 points or whatever as a result of appealing it. I don't know, but it's not going to go away. And it's just the sort of thing that Reading fans, I think, yeah, because there's obviously a lot of wrangling that's going on behind the scenes. We'll find out when it happens, basically. And the EFL, as I say, not too sure that they'll be firing off anything anytime soon. Hope, well, touch wood anyway, because that's not how they've generally been as an organisation. But more on that as we get it. And stay tuned to the Tyler Stem blog, website, Twitter feed, everything like that for what is going on latest with the club. Speaking of which, let's go into News Bites.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
not a huge amount of news going on around the club this week, so I'm just going to run you through what's happened with the other football teams inside the club. The women's team, having downed Aston Villa 3-0 to get off the mark for the new season, they suffered a late defeat to Bristol City in the WSL Cup group opener. So the start of that group campaign, they next face Birmingham away, not till November the 7th actually, I think. The under-23s, they lost 3-0 to Fulham, that leaves them 11th of the 14-team PL2 Division 2. They host winless Southampton on Monday the 25th, it's a week today as we're recording it, 7pm kickoff at the SCLS, so get yourself down to that. The under-18s, they lost 3-2 at home to Chelsea, Abraham and Griever put them 2 up before a bit of a comeback from Chelsea. They're 12th of the 14-team Premier League South Division. They travel to Brighton next weekend. And as always, you can catch reports from both the women's and the under-23s teams this season on the TileSN website. As much as we can cover them, we'll be doing that. So, big game for Reading senior men's team, as it were, on Wednesday. Blackpool at home. Let's talk about that now in big match preview.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you
Oz! Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
We're in a run of B's at the moment. Westie, we've had Barnsley, now we've got Blackpool. Four teams in a row we're facing start with B. Five of the next six, or five of the current six, I suppose, that Reading are playing, start with B. I don't know if that's ever happened before. But there's probably a stat out there, but I'm not particularly sure anyone's ever bothered to make it. This Blackpool team, far from a joke, really. They're 15th at the moment. 2-1 loss to Forest, ended a four-game unbeaten run. Probably a team that most people thought were just going to settle back down into League One without much complaining, but they are certainly doing a good job so far and probably won't be an easy game.
No, again, there's no easy games in the Championships, really. Is there any game could go either way. I think it's going to be a tough game for Reading, but we're at home, and again, with the players we've got, as long as they're all fit, there's no reason why we can't get some points from it. I would expect us to win, but, you know, as Championship games go, if we draw with them, I would be disappointed if we got nothing from the game, let's put it that way.
Do you give Femi Azeez the start? Obviously, Puskás had it against Barnsley. Azeez came on, has that bit more pace element, you know, chances over the top and all that sort of stuff. Do you start him or do you start Puskás?
Well, you know, I'm not a big Puskás fan. But to be fair, I think as an impact, if you're chasing a game last 20 minutes, I'd rather Azeez come off the bench and try and run the defence ragged than Puskás come off and try and get us a goal when he's not scored in I don't know how many appearances now. So I think it probably starts the way you start the game this week with Azeez to come off the bench. And you've got Clark on the bench as well, haven't you, that can come on and make an impact. So I think it probably start with exactly the same team as he did on Saturday, depending on players coming back from injury, obviously. I mean, it'd be nice to have Junior Hoylett back, to be fair, and put him up front, but that doesn't look like it's going to happen. So, it probably started the same way he started this week. I'd have thought. Personally, yeah. I wouldn't. But
yeah, no, I think I probably would. I think you're right. When I've seen Puskás come off the bench, I've not really seen, I can't remember any, at least anyway, any massive performances off the bench, as you say.
He's not a Lafondre, is he? He's not a Lafondre who comes off the bench and scores. Mm-hmm. He runs around and doesn't look like scoring, to be fair.
Yeah, and at the very least, you know, you can maybe hit him up top and stuff like that with Blackpool. I'll be honest, I don't know how Blackpool are going to come into this one, whether they are going to sit deep or play football or, you know, whatever. I'm not too sure on how they'll approach it. That's how Reading need to decide. Let's have some trivia then before we do the predictions. Blackpool have lost their last six visits to Reading. Westie, can you name me the year they last won in Reading?
2000.
1980.
Wow, was it that long? I was plucking numbers out of the air there, I must admit. I don't know what league was in 2000, but yeah, 1980. So it doesn't look good, does it, on paper? But the game's not played on paper, unfortunately.
Well, there's more, to be honest, because Reading have won six in a row at home to newly promoted sides in the league. And Blackpool, the best stat, Blackpool haven't won on a Wednesday in the league since 2011, which is eight games. So All of the signs say that Reading are going to win this one.
Yeah, which would suggest that someone might happen to the opposite of that, which normally does when we predict these easy wins, which it might probably will not be.
Yeah, me and my dad have always said that if you want a bad run ending, come to Reading and then we'll sort you out.
Yeah, historically it's always been the way.
Absolutely. Well, predictions then, let's go through that. You're leading the prediction league. We all picked a Barnsley win, but no one said a 1-0. So yourself, Wesley, on 13 points, Ollie 10, Ben 7, Sim and Adam 6, myself and Handbags 5. I am going to say a 2-1 victory for Reading, a win that's not quite as easy as many fans be hoping for, but nonetheless, we'll get it over the line. What are you going to say for this one?
Do you know what? I think at some point Reading are going to really get a good win, and I think it's going to be on Wednesday night. I'm going to go for something ridiculous. I'm going to go a 3-0 win.
3-0, lovely. I'll settle for that every day of the week. So that draws to a close episode 275 of the Tyler Sen podcast. Thank you very much, Westy, for popping on this week, and hopefully, as you say, that 3 points will arrive on Wednesday.
Yeah, again, all them bees, that's what's creating quite a buzz around the club, I think.
Oh dear. Oh dear. What a way to end it. I usually come up with a little bit of a speech at the end of the show, but maybe I won't this week.
That's ruined it for you, hasn't it? Sorry.
No, I do like a pun, to be fair. I think Reading this week just need to keep doing as they've been doing for ages. It's just a case of every game we turn up with the same mentality, and Barnsley did well to hold us back, but they ultimately couldn't. There's absolutely no reason to think that Blackpool won't be a team that we can step aside. And then obviously we go to Blackburn on Saturday, and that could well be a huge game for teams looking to get into the playoffs. But with 3 points for the Wolves on Wednesday, we'll be looking for that in very good form. Thank you very much for listening. Come on, you Arse.